and welcome to this Facing Post Bloodstock Postcast. I'm Martin Stevens, I've got my colleague James Thomas here, and this week we are going to be talking about our reflections on Royal Ascot last week from a breeding perspective. So let's jump straight in. Who was your star performer for the week?
I mean, there were so many good performances, it was hard to pin it down to one, but I suppose given that he's gone and done a quite historic double, Blue Point would have to be top of the list, I think. Would you agree? I
mean, yeah, absolutely. And of course, because this is a breeding postcast, we should address his stallion profile now, I suppose, now that he's been retired and will be standing at Dalham Hall.
Yes.
It probably goes without saying that breeders are going to jump in with both feet, aren't they?
Oh, you'd have to think so. I mean, you know, to achieve what he did with those two group ones back to back, such a short space of time, quite a remarkable feat, really, and obviously by Shamadal and other Royal Applause mare, so there's plenty there for breeders to get their teeth stuck into, and I'm sure it'll be hugely popular.
And breeders always feel comfort by going to a sire line in form, and of course Shamadal is a sire line in form. Not only did he have four winners during the week, well, two of them being Blue Points, but Mukadram, his son, had a winner.
Yes.
Lope de Vega had a couple of runners-up, I think, including the highly touted Lope Fernandez. And then at the weekend after Royal Ascot, Casamento had two group winners on one day in Italy.
Italy, yes.
So really, he's bound to be very, very busy next year.
Yeah, you'd think so, wouldn't you? I mean, as you say, you know, Lope de Vega's profile's going from strength to strength, and obviously a slight sort of outcross option there as well, isn't he? So, I'm sure it'll be high demand. Be interesting to see what kind of fee they price him at.
Yeah, I'd imagine it would be quite punchy.
Yeah, you'd think so, wouldn't you, given what you've done, but...
The other star, I think in terms of individual performance, who put up the best or the most breathtaking display was probably, for me, Japan.
Yes.
The King Edward VII Stakes. I must admit, we were talking about him in the Derby postcast a few weeks ago, and I wasn't really a big believer in Japan up until last week. I always wondered where the hype had come from, because he hadn't really shown anything. He had the short head victory last year in his group race, and then
Beresford Stakes.
Fourth, and obviously a very good third in the Derby. But now I think he's really come of age, hasn't he?
Yeah, well, he's a sort of textbook Aidan O'Brien, improving three orders in each run at three. He's taken quite a marked step forward, and he sort of looked more like the finished product when he won at Ascot there. And given who he's with, and given how he's bred, obviously being by Galileo out of Shasti, who's just a phenomenal mare, isn't she, really?
Yeah.
You'd have to think that we might not have seen the full extent of his talent still.
No. And I think they probably know that he's, with no disrespect to the Irish Derby, possibly a bit more special than going to the Irish Derby now, and he might go to those all-aged open races and take on...
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see whether he sort of pitch him in somewhere like the King George or the Chubmont, or there he goes next.
I definitely think he's in the mould of a Nathaniel or a Pentire or an Ella Manamu, those horses who win the King Edward VII and really sort of announce themselves as top-class middle-distance horses. And
well, that looked a really competitive race on paper, didn't it? There was some exposed, exciting horses in there, and he just absolutely blew them all away. So
absolutely. And we mentioned Shasti there for people who don't know. I wrote about it last week. I did maths and worked out that her yearlings have sold in Tattersall's Book One altogether for more than 11 million guineas, which is just extraordinary, isn't it?
Yeah.
Previously, it was at 3.6, I think, for Sir Isaac Newton, who won the Wolverton at Royal Ascot, and Secret Gesture, who was second in the Oaks, and I think she was disqualified from a Grade One in America, but was first past the post. So, an excellent family. And
obviously, his win the other day would sort of heighten expectations for his full brother, who Coolmore paid a fairly punchy 3.4 million guineas for last year. So,
now named Mogul, I saw.
Mogul,
yeah. And talking about stallion credentials, obviously we certainly don't want to see Japan retired anytime soon, but when he is eventually retired, and if he does go on and do the stuff, the fact that he costs so much money and all his relatives cost so much money really show there that he's a stunning looking individual. So another one who will be popular when the time comes.
Definitely, yeah.
Breeders.
Yes.
On the subject of future stallion careers, what do you make of Stradivarius? Because he's a real puzzle in that he's won the Gold Cup twice now, obviously, which is a race that owners of Jump Stallion Studs would be killing to stand.
Yeah.
But Jumps breeders generally like bays with black legs, and Stradivarius is very much the opposite, a chestnut with white socks, which tend to be looked down on in Jumps racing. What do you think would happen to him in the future, or do you think he'll just stay on the track for years to come?
I mean, given the type of horse he is, he seems to take his racing well. Obviously, he doesn't have the dreaded commercial profile particularly. You'd like to think they'd just keep him taking over as long as they can on the track, and we'll see plenty more of him. Whether we could try and emulate like a Yates and keep coming back to the Gold Cup, I'm not sure. In terms of a stallion career, I'm afraid to say it seems like the odds are sort of going to be slightly stacked against him, aren't they? And that he stays so well and that he's small relative to some other performers there. Yeah, as you say, he wouldn't fit the typical Jump Stallion mould, would he? And
no.
He's certainly going to find commercial favour hard to come by if he was to stand as a flat stallion.
Which is sad, really, isn't it? Because he obviously has the chance of passing on all those other traits he has, like...
Well, it's hugely sad. I mean, yeah, class, temperament. Yeah. I mean, there's so much going for him, really. It's a sort of sad indictment of where we are that you can talk about a horse like him and, you know, quite comfortably just sort of, I wouldn't say write him off, but, you know, it'd be a struggle to see him being hugely popular in the mould of, you know, other types of horses, which, you say, a real shame. But, I mean, hopefully that, you know, breeder's loss can be racing fans' gain, and he'll stick around for as long as possible and prove everyone.
I think he will stand as a stallion one day, and I hope that people overcome some of those prejudices and give him the chances he deserves and see what happens. So they were our star performers. Who was your star stallion of the meeting?
Well, the stallion obviously has to be quite closely linked to what we just talked about there, doesn't it? And I mean, it's hard to see past Shamadar having the winner of four individual races is not too bad going, is it really? I mean, he'd be high up there. But there was really competitive sort of nature at the top of the stallion table, wasn't it? Because he had four individual winners. You had Galileo, who had three, which, given the sort of exalted company he normally keeps, you'd almost expect that, wouldn't you, really?
Yeah.
And then obviously you had See the Stars, who had three winners, two of which were Group 1s, which he was the only stallion to supply more than one Group 1 winner. So,
which is why, for Bated Breath to get three winners, the same as See the Stars and Galileo, who are celebrity brothers, half-brothers, and Shamadal, who is expensive and now mostly private for the Maktoum family, for Bated Breath on £10,000 stallion fee, to get three winners, including two group winners, is really extraordinary, isn't
it? Yeah, well, I mean, no disrespect to the horse, but I think at the start of the week, if you'd have said Bated Breath would be matching See the Stars and Galileo, people would have thought you'd lost the plot slightly, wouldn't they, I think? But
and what do we think of Bated Breath's winners then? Biometric was the horse who mowed down Turgenev.
Yes.
What do you think he'll go on to do? Group class eventually, or...?
I mean, it's a bit of a sort of a cliche, isn't it, that to win a handicap like that, you have to be a sort of group horse in disguise. I mean, given that he's homebred by Judmont, you know, those families come up with proper horses so regularly that you wouldn't say no, would you?
No.
And clearly very progressive as well. So, you know, certainly sort of listed Group 3 class at the very least.
Space Traveller, who was a surprise winner of the Jersey Stakes, and his form figures don't make him look the most consistent type, but I know he's obviously run with more credit than those form figures suggest sometimes.
Yeah, well, he's turned up at plenty of tough races, hadn't he? And, you know, obviously starting price of 25-1 or whatever, he probably wasn't the most sort of sexy horse going in there. But, you know, without wanting to knock the horse too much, given that he's gone and won and, you know, did it in quite gutsy fashion as well. But you suspect that's sort of his level. But, I mean, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that being his peak at all, is there, really? I don't think.
No, and then Bated Breath's other winner was Daya in the Albany.
I think she's the sort of most exciting out of the trio, in my opinion. You could definitely see her going on something like the Cheveley Park or the Moyglare over in Ireland and, you know, giving Bated Breath the all-important Group 1. Before Royal Ascot, the thing that everyone said about Bated Breath was he needs to get a big horse to sort of justify the foundations that he laid down. Well, now he's gone and got three Royal Ascot winners. The filly, T-Roy, looks like actually could be something really useful. So,
I think there'll be a lot of commercial breeders who will have breathed a sigh of relief after Royal Ascot, because Beta Breath covered big numbers in the last two seasons. I think it was 140 odd last year and 100 odd the year before. Yeah. Because he's always been touted as this good commercial option.
He's always threatened to be a really useful option, hasn't he? And having sort of bubbled under for a year or so, he's now sort of gone and within the space of 5 days really gone and consolidated the promise that he'd shown.
Yeah, so this looks like a breakthrough season for him, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Your mare of the week, or dam of the week?
Again, it's a close run thing, isn't it? I mean, Linwood Chase, so it's hard to knock her achievements, having had three Royal Ascot winners. Obviously, capped last week by Starcatcher, who was one of See the Stars' three winners, and she looked like she could be a potential Group 1 winner in waiting, didn't she? Although I know you're very keen on another mare who's also had three big
Ream 3
horses. Yes,
right about, yeah. 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 She's had five horses, all rated. Five flat runners, and they've all managed an RPR of 107 at least, including Imperial Charm, who was a very close third in the Pooleash last month. Mm. Just a very, very consistent mare, and she's done it all with different stallions, which is interesting. And she's got young stock coming through by Frankel and See the Stars, so she's definitely one to watch. I highlighted her because she's possibly a name that we haven't really grasped yet.
But no,
she's
no.
She's actually done an awful lot under the radar. Going back to Linwood Chase, the other interesting thing was, so Linwood Chase produced two tercentenary winners, which are now Hampton Court winners, Pisco Sour and Cannock Chase,
yes,
and Starcatcher for Haskam and Valiant. And I think the last mare who produced three winners was Frappe, who was also bred by Haskam and Valiant. She right. produced Thakafat and Curvy and Power, but she wasn't bred from by Haskam and Valiant. And then I realised, looking back as well, that Crystal Ocean is from a Haskam and Valiant family. And of course, Anthony Oppenheimer of Haskam and Valiant had Cracksman last year, and Poet's Word is from a Haskam and Valiant family. It's really amazing how Anthony Oppenheimer has sort of forged a lot of
the
these
market
top families. Yeah. So definitely Linwood Chase. And the other thing I was drawing attention to in my article this week was it was just uncanny how many horses this week were following their siblings into the winners' enclosure at Royal Ascot.
Mm.
I won't list them all because I can't remember them all. To be they were. It was really uncanny just how many there were. Breeder of the week.
Well, you've sort of slightly stolen my thunder by mentioning Anthony Oppenheimer and Haskam and Valiant, but for some of the reasons you just mentioned there and. The Starcatcher, I think, looked like she could be something really special further down the line. I think he would get the nod from my perspective.
Yeah. One of the pleasing things last week was that the honours were spread quite far and wide, I thought. Although Godolphin and Rabo and Dali and Sheikh Obeid and the Maxim family generally and their associates spread a lot of winners. And Cornwall obviously had at least one winner bred and more bought in, but also lots of placed horses bred by Cornwall. But actually, beyond there, I would pick out, as I did in my article, Crossfields, who had Tis Marvellous, second in the Wokingham, and Ventura Rebel, just touched off in the Norfolk Stakes, and they're both by very inexpensive stallions. Fiona Deniff had Beat the Bank and Catchy, both from her Hill Welcome family, both run very well in Group 1s. And even all the way through, there's David Hodge from Letty Farms there in Wales, who bred Soldier's Call, third in the King's Stand, by showcasing from an inexpensive mare. Oak Lodge Stud, they probably don't get an awful lot of credit for having bred Blue Point. Just generally, I hadn't realised before I moved to Lincolnshire last year, just how East Midlands is a cradle of a group winner.
Is it?
Yeah, because you have Fiona Deniff is just over the border in Nottinghamshire. Bumble Mitchell, she sold this runner-up in the Diamond Jubilee, Dream of Dreams. And then you have Son of Lincolnshire and Tim Lane, who bought the Dam of Darye for 35,000 guineas for his former employers at Oak Grove. So, I think the main theme of the week was Lincolnshire breeding success.
Who'd have thought it? It was, sort of, to summarise what we just touched on, you know, with the stallions and the breeders, it was nice to see a sort of spread of... it wasn't all just Galileo. You didn't have to be going to a stallion or having a mare that cost an absolute fortune to have success. So, you know, seeing the likes of Bated Breath and Macadram and Fiona Deniff and Crossfields and, you know, breeders and things like that sort of showing up and, you know, gives everyone a bit of hope, I think, doesn't it? Which is...
No, exactly, yeah.
Exactly. Nice to see.
The two-year-old performance of the week.
Tricky. I was impressed with the Bated Breath filly of Roger Verne's Darye. Probably clattered through that name, but she looked very good. And the I thought the Norfolk winner was impressive as well.
Ayali.
Yeah, Ayali, yes. I thought he could be called the winner from quite some way out.
He could. He was very, very emphatic. He was the most emphatic short head or neck winner.
Yes. Yes.
He seemed to really, really be way ahead of the field. And then all of a sudden, Ventura Rebel was...
Yeah, closing quickly. Well, I mean, his forte is clearly speed, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure whatever he goes on to achieve from here on in, I'm sure people will look back at that ripping race and think, how on earth has a Royal Ascot winning two-year-old been beat on debut in a what appeared on face value a fairly humble ripping maiden? But I mean, it was as far as narrow victories go, it was pretty impressive, wasn't it? And obviously, Ascot's a stiff track, so given how much speed he'd shown back on a more speed favouring course, you'd imagine he can rank pretty highly this year, I think.
Yeah, and a good story with Ayali in that he was bought by Star Bloodstock to Breeze this year very cheaply, I think about 35,
yes.
And over the winter they obviously knew that Ayali was training very well over 2 or 3 furlongs, and then they saw that the dam was available to buy in the Tats February catalogue and managed to buy her for 9,000 guineas.
Yeah.
And now have a foal out of her as well, to a cover that's probably worth at least 5,000. Yeah. So they must be very, very pleased with themselves.
Yeah, well, another one that can sort of give the people not oil rich or head of a conglomerate organisation hope that they can get stuck in and achieve something of note.
Probably gives us too much hope, really, because it just gets very, very tempting to look in those February and July sale catalogues and see those mares who have quite nice pedigrees and a commercial cover and think, oh yeah, it's easy, but I suppose we should remember it's the exception, not the rule. Well, but it does give you hope, of course. I actually thought...
Everyone thought, like you think, no one would breed anything, would they?
No. But by the end of the week, I thought that the two-year-old performance that deserved to be hyped more and possibly didn't, because maybe it was overshadowed by Blue Point on Saturday, was Pinatubo, who absolutely posed up and beat a very highly regarded horse in Lope Fernandez.
Yeah, that was impressive, wasn't
it? He did very little wrong. But
yeah.
I think it was a great groundswell of support or belief behind him, does there, or have I missed it?
No, well, I think people have probably had to eat a slight slice of humble pie after what he did on Saturday. I suspect the way the Woodcote was run probably masked how good he actually was. And I suspect people were happy to look at that and think, well, it was circumstance more than raw ability, and obviously... Lope Fernandez went there with a huge price tag, was he 950,000 euros? Obviously, he's a Lope de Vega half brother to Dark Vision, and was trained by Edna O'Brien and won impressively on debut. Yeah. And he was a real talking horse. And he did absolutely nothing wrong. I mean, I thought 2 furlongs out, I thought Lope had the whole thing sewn up. He was travelling really well. But then, you know, when it came down to the crunch, Pinatubo was just the better horse on the day, wasn't he? I mean, Lope being a big horse, whether it would have progressed past him in 6 months or 12 months' time remains to be seen. But he was, you can take nothing away from Pinatubo. He was really impressive, wasn't he? Another feather in the cap of Chamadel, showing that you can get older horses that train on to the 5 and lightning fast 2-year-olds as well.
Yeah, and he's from got quite a stout family, all 10 and 12 furlong winners out of a mare by Dalakani, who's obviously. Stamina, so you'd imagine by the end of obviously he's already won over 7 furlongs as a 2-year-old in the spring or summer, so he's obviously a staying horse. But I suppose the question mark I have about him, even though I've just seen him do that, is that Woodcote Stakes winners have such a patchy record, and also the Chesham Stakes. For every Churchill in September, you get some quite average winners, don't you?
Yes.
It doesn't always seem to be the golden highway to success, but you can't really hold that against the horse, I suppose. But just a doubt in the back of my mind.
Yeah, well, as I say, I mean, for the time being, he sort of takes top ranking amongst the juveniles, doesn't he? But, you know, we are still relatively early in the year, so there's still plenty of water to pass under the bridge, and whether we'll be talking about him in quite the same terms later in the year, we'll have to see, won't we? But
yeah. The other two-year-old race, which I don't think quite got the credit it deserved, was the Coventry, because I suspect all those first three home are very good horses.
Mm.
And perhaps the fact that all of them are good and not one of them was outstanding has probably maybe downplayed the hype around that race. But I suspect Threat and Gildsman and the winner Arizona will all turn out to be high class, if not top class horses.
Yeah. Yeah. Obviously a sort of important-ish win for No Name Never.
Yes.
Consolidating what he did last year with his first 2-year-olds.
Yeah.
No, I would agree with that. I mean, I know Threat was very highly thought of, wasn't he? So for Arizona to come and run him down was, you know, obviously a big tick in his box. And Gildsman was making a quick reappearance, having won impressively on debut not long ago. So yeah, I would agree with you that those three could all be something out of the ordinary.
Now this will be up your street. Handicap performance of the week.
Can I say the Grand Vizier?
Yes. If you're allowed to, I don't know if you're able to.
Yes, okay, well, there you go. I will plump for him. I just thought there was plenty of interesting angles with him, obviously, giving Frankel another Royal Ascot winner. He looked pretty well bought by Alex Elliott, who paid $170,000 for him at the horse in training sales. And so he's gone to Ian Williams, and he now looks like a horse you could... there's, you know, going to be plenty more to come from him, whether they stick to handicaps and go for things like the Ebor or the Cesarewitch, or whether they wait and see what the handicapper makes of his performance and possibly look at stakes races. But
yeah, he's always a 4-furlong handicap winner would be difficult to say what he'd do next, isn't it? What do you think his main attributes are that entitle him to win? Would we put him down in trip, or would you put him in a keep him to larger fields?
Well, he's going to have to go down in trip, isn't he? Just by the sheer fact that the race program doesn't throw up all that many races like that. Obviously, he's won over shorter trips, and I mean, clearly his forte is stamina. But you know, 2 miles, you know, I don't know. Obviously, it's not really for me to say whether he'd perform as well as he did back at a mile and a half. But he's always threatened to be a pretty smart horse, and his win the other day looked like he'd finally got it all together for New Connection. So that was, you know, I could see there being more to come from him. And I suppose another one you'd have to mention as well is Thanks B. It's impressive in the Sandringham.
Yeah, well, funny enough, I was going to say Magnetic Charm, because obviously they finished quite upside each other, and Magnetic Charm was giving £21.
Yes.
So I'd go with her. But obviously, I suppose their careers are going to take different trajectories, aren't they? Thanks B is winning a handicap off 8 Stone is going to be in handicaps for a while, isn't she? Probably, unless her connections are feeling bold, whereas Magnetic Charm, I think, said after race that she's probably going to go and do group races now.
Right.
I think. But, funny enough, Magnetic Charm is going to be one of my handicap performances of the week.
I suppose we can't talk about handicaps and not mention Kate Byron.
No, that's the indisputable handicap performance of the week, wasn't it? Carrying 9-8 or 9-9. To a daylight victory in a race as competitive as the Wokingham is pretty special.
Yeah.
Another good gelding for Shaker Bade.
Yes.
After Defoe and Zabiel Prince this year. Anything else? Anything more hidden that you noticed running midfield, further back even, or? No, that's...
No. Go on then. What have you dug out that you're absolutely itching to tell us all?
No, absolutely nothing. Magnetic Charm was my trump card.
Oh, yes. Well, she was...
I feel I've suitably showed up. I should say that Thanks B is a very good advertisement for her sire, Mukadram by Shamadal.
Yes.
getting a reputation as a good value sire. Mm. Where were we? Handicap?
So, well, I suppose if you want to talk about beaten horses, there was obviously Kingman had a winner with Sangarius, but he also had a couple of horses who finished second as well. King of Comedy was second to Circus Maximus and St. James's Palace, and he looks like, based on what we saw at Ascot, that he'll be winning a Group 1 in the not-too-distant future. And obviously Fox Chairman didn't get the best of runs behind Sangarius and the Tercentenary or Hampton Court, whatever it's called now. So, yes, while he had a winner, but obviously those placed horses undoubtedly did Kingman's rapid ascent of the stallion ranks no harm whatsoever.
No. Your surprise of the week, was there anything from a pedigree perspective that took you by surprise?
I think I'd have to come back to something we touched on earlier with Bated Breath. As I say, at the start of the week, you know, when you look at which stallions had what runners and numbers of runners and, you know, fancied horses, Bated Breath certainly wouldn't have been on the tip of my tongue to be up there challenging for leading sire, rather than to have three winners at a meeting as competitive as that, and, you know, good winners as well. So Jersey Stakes with Space Traveller and Albany with Dyer.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, obviously a really competitive handicap winner with Biometric. That was the one thing that I was certainly wasn't expecting come the start of the week.
The sire I would pick out as a maybe more underneath the radar, who did quite well from having been quiet for a few years, was Motivator.
Mm.
A few placed horses with Palisator and Time to Study and
King Otica,
yes. Two of those bred by Howard Kenny, where Motivator stands. And also his dam sire of Ayali, who won the Norfolk, and Fleeting in the Ripplesdale, which is quite a good little haul for a week's work when he's not been the most productive stallion in terms of foal numbers and perhaps popularity in the last few years. So that was very good. And then the revelation from a racing performance, I thought, was Nagano Gold in the Hardwick, who had this extraordinary race where he was almost impeded at the start of the race and then travelled like a dream all the way around under Christophe Soumillon. And perhaps Soumillon can make the ease with which horses are travelling look exaggerated sometimes by his style. But this horse seems to be going very, very well, and then still didn't get a run going in the straight, and then finished like a train. And
there was a brief moment where I thought he was going to get up and win, which was incredible, really, given...
With a few extra yards, he would have won, wouldn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
I tend to think that maybe in Britain and Ireland we've taken slightly... patronising view of the Czech raider, and we think that maybe the trainer didn't really know what he's doing and he's sort of tilting at windmills, whereas we've got the superior horses. And I think even now he's done that and shown that he can run right up with these good horses, that people now think that the form is
questionable
because of that. But I would certainly be willing to back him again in Group 2 company each way. You know, good horses do come out of Eastern Europe, like Overdose, obviously, and Subway Dancer, I think, a few years ago. So, and he's another one for the smaller breeder by 60s Icon.
Yeah, yeah.
And the smaller buyer, because he only costs something like £3,000 or £5,000 as a...
£3,500, wasn't it? Yeah.
So it's another...
It's a sort of less trodden path of, you know, going and buying him as a foal and to race. Obviously, wouldn't be many people's modus operandi, but...
No.
It'll be interesting to see where he goes next. Obviously, there's all sorts of fancy targets being touted, the Ark or the Melbourne Cup. It'd be fascinating to see where he does next.
Well, he's certainly got staying power because he's by 60s Icon and St. Ledger winner out of a mare by Monson. And Monson's usually stamina. So yeah, I could easily see him maybe winning a Group 1 would be fanciful, but I could definitely see him running... placed in.
He's already won stakes races in France, hasn't he? Obviously we sort of talked about Stradivarius and the profile of staying horses, and obviously a horse by a St. Ledger winner in 60s Icon out of a stamina bred mare. Clearly wouldn't be everyone's cup of tea at the sales, would it, nowadays? No. But obviously he's gone and shown people what they missed out on when someone bought him for...
Yeah.
I think it was Thomas Yander bought him for £3,500.
Yeah. And perhaps for those... In our strange breeding world these days, for those really stamina bred horses to reveal themselves, they have to go out to other countries and be prepared and made into stars and then come back and show us what we're missing.
Yeah.
As you say, it's quite hard to imagine a trainer would have done that over here with a 60s icon out of a Monson mare, but there you go.
Be interesting to see if current connections can keep hold of him, because you'd imagine, given his profile for the, you know, possibly big races in Australia and the like, whether people would be tempted to make an offer and whether connections would have the faith to keep hold of him, or whether they'd think it was worth cashing in or not. We'll have to see whose colours he runs in next.
No, absolutely. Now, is there anything else you wanted to get off your chest about Ascot last week?
Not especially, is it?
No, I think we've covered most of the... I'll just check my Group 1 winners to make sure we haven't missed anyone out who deserves mention. Whipper obviously had the Queen Anne Stakes winner. That was quite odd from a form point of view, wasn't it, the Queen Anne, in that the horses who had been well beaten in the Lockinge came out and and the horses who had...
I don't think that's the first time that race has thrown up a slightly head-scratching result, is it? But
the filly I really like in that race was One Master, who showed a really nice turn of foot and looked like she might do something and slightly flattened out towards the end, but already a Group 1 winner from a fantastic family. She'll be a wonderful breeding prospect for Lael Stables.
You'd imagine if she drops back to 7 furlongs somewhere along the line, she'd take plenty of beating, wouldn't she?
Absolutely. And maybe the lastly, the one thing we should mention, another horse who breeders will be lining up to use either next year or the year after is Advertise.
Yep.
He's obviously a Group 1 winner at 2, and now a Group 1 winner at 3 by a very, very fashionable and very good young stallion in Showcasing. Yep. Out of a pivotal mare, so he's got ticks in lots and lots of boxes. And will probably add to Phoenix Thoroughbred's growing portfolio of stallions around the world.
Yeah.
And they've already said he will likely shuttle to Australia. So interesting to see that the stallion ranks are slowly, quietly taking shape for the next couple of years.
Yeah, well, cause I think it was something you either wrote or spoke about not so long ago, that actually so far this year quite a lot of the Group 1s have been won by geldings or mares, hadn't they? Which obviously, doesn't do stallion matters any favours.
No.
But now I think we've seen a few more horses that will obviously eventually ply their trade at stud last week. And
Yeah. Absolutely. Okay, well, that's Royal Ascot wrapped up. thanks for watching, and we'll be back in a few weeks' time.